Thanks for tuning into Journey. Everyone is welcome at the table. We are a community being shaped by Jesus, experiencing and practicing humility, curiosity, belonging, and generosity. We hope to be a people who embrace the way of Jesus by listening first, speaking second, loving freely, and giving generously.
You guys ready? I don't think I'm ready, so stay with me. This morning, we are going to talk, we're not talking about John 3:16, which everyone say, yes, stoked. That series is boring, right? No. I made a joke that the next word, we're going word for word if you don't know that. The next word in the scripture is that. I'm like, I don't think I can spend 35 minutes on the word that, but maybe Mike can, so come next week. Today we're going to break for just a moment and talk about something that's really near and dear to my heart and hopefully maybe near and dear to you guys. But I want to start a little bit with a story because this morning we were talking about fear. Yeah. Yeah, fear. So be afraid, okay? Now, I'm pretty familiar with fear. And I've known and I've probably been afraid my entire life. Part of that is I'm an Enneagram 6, if you guys subscribe to the Enneagram. Whoa, okay. Yeah, thank you. In the back, she's like, yes! But it's super fun. Enneagram 6s, we enjoy probably the best life ever. That's not true. But we are always thinking about the worst case scenario. Literally the worst thing that can happen in our life, kids, money, relationships, whatever. Fear is always present within us. I'll give you an example. I'm terrified in this moment. No, that's not true. I am a little afraid. No, you guys are great. I'm stoked to be with you guys. Now, I don't know if I've always experienced life this way, but I do have a story from my childhood that I want to start with that I think, if I go back as far as I can, I think about like the moment I was truly terrified in life. I was 10. It was right before Christmas, and my mom took us to the movies. Now, I love the movies. Love, love, love the movies. Always got to get popcorn there. Actually, my first job was a movie theater, too, so like I'm all in when it comes to movies. But it was right before Christmas. My mom's like, let's go to the movies. We're like, yes. And like every great parent, she picks a perfect and wonderful kids movie. For me, it was the movie called Scream. That was the movie my mom took us to. Thanks, Mom, if you're watching. At 10 years old, yes. Man, I'm literally, okay, I'm triggered right now. But I watched this entire movie as a 10-year-old in complete terror, as I should have been. And when I got home, the only thing I could think about is, I'm going to die. Like, I'm literally going to die. And the way our house was set up is we had kind of the bedrooms, then we had this extra spare room, there was like a sunroom, windows on every side, and that's where my bed was. There was a front door to our house, but we always used the back door, and where my head was, the door was right there. Now, when I got in my room after watching this movie, I was like, there's no way I'm gonna sleep in this room. So I slept in my brother's room for literal weeks. I was terrified. Again, 10-year-old watching that movie. Now, what did I need in that moment? What did I need from my mom? What did I need? I imagine if you guys have 10-year-olds, you guys may have heard a 10-year-old come up to you and say, Mom, Dad, I'm scared. What do they need in that moment? Does it help your child if you look at them and say, ah, don't be afraid. Go back to bed, you'll be fine. Right? Or is there something else, something more that they need? I recently went through this experience called Plumline. Shout out to my friend, Dr. Jake Smith. And for those of you that don't know, Plumline is this kind of spiritual formation group work. And it takes you through the 8 core feelings, and we'll talk more about that later. But in my first group, as people were sharing, I'm sitting there on the couch, and we're going one by one, and we're sharing different parts of our story, and I'm sitting there, and my heart starts racing. My hands are getting sweaty, right? I noticed my breath is really, really quick. What I didn't know is in that moment I was having a full-on panic attack in front of a bunch of strangers that I don't know. I didn't know what to do. But Jake, the facilitator, he recognized it. He looked at me, he helped ground me in the room, which if you've never had a panic attack, it's one of the most terrifying things that I could describe. Imagine having no control over your body and not knowing what's happening. It's terrifying. But he calmed me down, and he began to ask me some questions. He didn't say, "Hey, Rob, don't be afraid." But instead, he began to ask why I was afraid. He goes, "Rob, what is going on inside of you that is bringing up this fear?" Now, I calmed down and I expressed part of the fear was doing emotional work with a bunch of people that I don't know, which is scary. The other thing is I've done other emotional things and it's kind of just left me a mess. I went through another experience a couple years ago, and for 2 years, I was just a mess in front of people, our staff, my wife. I damaged relationships, and there was this fear that I would do that again, and I would just be alone. I was just afraid. Jake looked at me, and he assured me that I wasn't alone, and that it wouldn't be what I experienced before. He helped me in my fear. And what I learned in Plumline is that there's a need in fear. Our body is telling us that we need something. Now, this is true of all emotions, but with fear, the need is for protection, help, and refuge. And that fear itself is not bad. Let me say that one more time. Fear itself is not bad. Our emotions are not bad. I don't know if you guys have ever read the book Voice of the Heart by Chip Dodd, but he kind of describes these 8 core feelings as hurt, lonely, sad, anger, fear, shame, guilt, and glad. He goes on to say that these core 8 feelings are the beginning of expression of all human emotional experience. And he believes that each feeling is positive because of where it can lead. He says, "There was a time when I thought and have been tutored to believe that these feelings are neither good nor bad, they just are, but it's not true." He would say that all 8 feelings are good. And he says, it's not our feelings that are bad, but rather it is the behavior that follow those feelings that can be bad. Each and every feeling is a gift from God, even those 7 that are normally tagged as negative: hurt, lonely, sad, anger, fear, shame, and guilt. He says those are good. So if our emotions are not bad, why do we spend so much time trying to avoid them? Trying to deny them or hide them? They are part of this human expression from God, and yet so often we run from them. I'm guilty of it. I think over the last few years, fear specifically has been more evident in our lives than ever before. Whether it's the political state of the world, the injustices we see, sickness and disease, fear is just present around us. And there's this one phrase that has come up that I've really struggled with. I see it everywhere, and there's nothing wrong with it. I think it just doesn't sit well with me always. It's this phrase, faith over fear. And again, I know what it's trying to say. I'm not trying to dismiss it. But I think it misses the point sometimes. And I think it welcomes us to simply deny our fear and belief. I just don't think that's what we ought to do. I mean, take Jesus. He is fully God and fully man. He displays the full range of human expression and emotion, and yet he did not sin. So there's this story that sticks out to me with him specifically when it comes to human fear. It's from Matthew 26, and it's the last night that he's here on earth. And he goes to pray in the garden. You guys have probably heard this story before, but I'm just going to read it very quickly. Then Jesus went with them to the olive grove called Gethsemane, and he said, "Sit here while I go over to pray." He took Peter and Zebedee's 2 sons, James and John, and he became anguished and distressed. He told them, "My soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me." He went on a little further and bowed his face to the ground, praying, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup of suffering be taken away from me. Yet, I want your will to be done, not mine. Then he returned to the disciples and found them asleep. He said, Peter, couldn't you watch with me even 1 hour? Keep watch and pray so that you will not be given into temptation, for the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. Then a second time Jesus left them, and he said, my Father, if this cup cannot be taken away unless I drink it, your will be done. When he returned to them again, he found them sleeping, for they couldn't keep their eyes open. So he went to pray a third time. Three times he prays to the Father, saying the same things. Then he comes back to the disciples, finds them asleep, says, go ahead and sleep, have your rest. But look, the time has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Up, let's be going. My betrayer is here. So as I read this, the question that I have is, what is Jesus experiencing here? We know he's filled with grief and sorrow, but there's this pleading from the Father for another way. In Luke's account of the story, he's actually sweating blood as angels come to tend to him. In my opinion, what Jesus was experiencing was fear. Now, was he afraid of death, torture, or the pain his body would experience? I don't know. But it does seem like in his humanity, he's experienced a level of fear that would be normal for someone about to die. Does Jesus deny his fear and simply rely on his faith? Or does he bring his fear to the Father, which leads to faith? You see, Jesus had a need to be comforted and protected by his Father. So going back to what Chip Dodd said in Voice of the Heart, if emotions aren't bad, what are they? Well, Dodd describes them as a gift, and I'm kind of bummed Mike's not here because I actually brought a chart with me, which I think is going to be better than any one of his charts. Part of it is I didn't make this. He makes all of his from scratch, usually with Excel, and I don't know how that program works. Okay, I don't know if you could see that. But in the middle, we have each of those eight core emotions: hurt, lonely, sad, anger, fear, shame, guilt, and glad. Again, he says all these emotions are good. And I just want to focus in here on fear. He says the gift of fear is wisdom and faith. And the impairment, or the unhealthy, or the curse, is anxiety or control. What I've learned is in fear, if you actually go into isolation, it actually goes into another step further, and it leads to rage, which is crazy because I think we associate rage with anger, but it's actually associated with fear. Rage is kind of this last-ditch effort to gain control. Now, I would say for most of my life, I lived in an impaired state, and I didn't even know it. I was anxious often. I would experience at times panic attacks. I've had a number of panic attacks for a number of reasons. Intense anxiety and fear, which if you knew the complexity in my whole story, it would make sense. Where I grew up was not safe. The people that I grew up with were not safe. But my entire life, it has mainly been fear-based. Now, things started to change over the last couple of years, and I say this to, I think, offer some hope. Part of it changed when I started to do some story work and heart work. The Enneagram specifically helped me understand that my primary emotion that I struggled with was fear, just like that girl. And story work helped me understand why I was so fearful. Diving into my story helped me understand that. But there's these moments or these markers in my life that I just hang on to because they're significant and they help change who I am. So there's this story that I have of my daughter, and I think I have a picture of her. This is Adelina. Gosh, I love her. She's the best. If you know her, she's the best. If you don't know her, she's the best. But there's a whole story with Addie and God's provision. It's really long, and so I won't give you that, but if you want to know, I'm happy to share that with you. But the gist of it is we weren't supposed to have any more kids. We have a son named Eli. He's 8. About a year and a half in, we found out that my wife had blood clots. We couldn't have kids anymore. Doctors literally looked at us and said, hey, you should consider adoption. And so we had this dream of adding, and we had a name even, and we were told we couldn't have any more kids. And about a year later, we got pregnant, which a miracle in itself. They told us we wouldn't carry the baby to term. And then my wife, she had a high-risk pregnancy. We were in doctors constantly. She was on blood thinners. They said if we do carry this baby to term, she's going to be at risk for so many different things. We have to induce your labor, all these things, right? My fear was at an all-time high. Now, we have what is called a doula, for those of you that don't know. I don't really know. But this doula was amazing, and she was a great just guide for us. But she did this thing called fear clearing with us, which if you've never done this or heard of this, it's crazy. But it was really helpful for me. Basically, we sat in our living room, and we went through every worst-case scenario that I can think of, and we talked about it. So she asked me, she goes, if your baby dies, will you still trust God? And I was like, yo. She goes, if your wife dies, what will you do? Literally, the worst case scenarios that I've had in my head, she put them out in front of us. And I don't know, there was something about bringing fear into the light that just changed things for me. Right? Now, there was an honoring to my fear that it brought, I think. Now, here's the funny thing. With all this fear clearing and all this thing, I felt really ready. And this pregnancy was different than my son's pregnancy. I had no idea what to do in the room. I was just like there in terror, like, I don't know what's happening. With this, I was supposed to be like a partner with my wife, really help guide her, walk her through this, right? So I had like tools, I had a job, I had a checklist of all the things that I'd be doing, right? And then one day, I'm at home, I'm playing video games at 3 p.m. Gentlemen, do not do that, especially when your wife is pregnant. I get a text. My wife says, I think I'm having contractions. I was like, yo. Mind you, we live in Spring Hill. We had to get to Nashville. It's 3 p.m. You do the math. We called our nurse. They said, you know what, just wait another hour. If the contractions get worse, then maybe come in. We had this kind of checking us. We're like, no, I think we're going to come in now. So we threw everybody in the car. We take off trying to get to St. Thomas in Nashville from Spring Hill. About 10 minutes into the ride, well, about 15 minutes, I had to stop and get gas. I didn't get gas either, right? And it was one of those moments where I was like, I didn't know how serious it was. Gosh, I'm sorry, babe, if you're watching. We pulled up to the gas station. I look at her. I was like, do I have time to get a Coke? And she's like, no. No. I'm like, okay. So we start driving. We get to Liberty Pike at 8:40. My wife goes, I think I need to push. And I said, can you not? Can you hold it? I don't know. Again, I don't know how this works. Right? She goes, I can. So we pull over on the side of the road, and my wife starts to give labor. My wife is high risk, on blood thinners. Our daughter's at risk. I don't know if she knows this, but I'm not a doctor. And so I do what I only know to do. One, I call 911, they're like, okay, we're on the way, just stay. I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. But then I call our doula, and I literally, like, this is for real. I jumped on the phone. I was like, we didn't clear this fear. What do I do? She was so sweet. She's like, man, this is your wife's natural response. It's okay. You can trust the Father. I'm still getting emotional thinking about it. So on that day, February 13th, our daughter, and I have another picture, was born inside of our car in the middle of nowhere. I'll tell you this, my trust grew that day. And my trust and faith in the Father grew that day. My fear turned into faith. But it was because in my fear, I recognized that I needed something, someone outside of me to bring comfort. So I say all that to say, how does faith and fear intersect? Can you be both faithful and fearful? And is that not what it means to be human? There's a story in the Old Testament with the prophet Elijah. And if you don't know the story of Elijah, he's a pretty incredible man, or was. And he experienced some pretty miraculous events. He was fed by ravens. I don't know what that looks like. He raised a woman's son from the dead. He prophesied a 3-year drought to the king. And I would describe him as an immense man of faith. And if you knew him, I think you would say the same. But I want to jump into the story in 1 Kings. And he's talking with the king of Israel, King Ahab. And Ahab summoned all the people of Israel and the prophets of Mount Carmel. Then Elijah stood in front of them and said, "How much longer will you waver, hobbling between two opinions?" See, the people at the time were wavering between whether they were going to worship God, the one true God, or Baal. And so he asked them, "How much longer will you waver, hobbling between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, then follow him." But the people were completely silent. Then Elijah said to them, "I'm the only prophet of the Lord who is left, but there are 450 Baal prophets. So let's do a little contest." I don't know why he did this, but he said, "Bring two bulls. The prophets of Baal, you guys get your side. You can do whatever you want to him. Just do not light it on fire. And I'll do the same thing. I'll bear a bull on my side. I just won't light it on fire. But then you guys call the name of your God, and the God who answers will set fire to this bull." And all the people are like, "Yeah, that seems legit. Seems like a good way to figure this out. Why don't we just do that, right? With all the disagreements. Like, you got an opinion, I got an opinion. Let's get a bull. Bring it out here. Tim, you get one side, I get the other. Okay?" But they prepared one of the bulls and placed it on the altar, and they called on the name of Baal from morning until noontime, shouting, "Oh Baal, answer us." But there was no reply of any kind. Shocker, right? They danced, I don't know what it looked like, hobbling around the altar that they had made. And then at noontime, this is my favorite part, Elijah starts mocking them. He says, "You'll have to shout louder, for surely he is a god. Perhaps he's daydreaming or relieving himself." Or maybe he's away on a trip. Or is asleep and needs to be awakened. This is a man who, he's pretty confident, right? He's scoffing 450 people that stand on the other side. So they shouted louder, and following their normal custom, they cut themselves with knives and swords until blood gushed out. It's a beautiful story for a Sunday morning. They raved all afternoon until the time of the evening sacrifice, but there was still no sound, no reply, no response. Then Elijah called to the people, "Come over here." They all crowded around. As he repaired the altar of the Lord that had been torn down, he took 12 stones, one to represent each of the tribes of Israel, and he used the stones to rebuild the altar in the name of the Lord. Then he dug a trench around the altar large enough to hold about 3 gallons. He piled the wood on the altar, cut the bull into pieces, and laid the pieces of wood. Then he said, "Fill four large jars with water and pour it over the offering." He's trying to soak this wood. He's trying to show them who God is. After they had done this, he said, "Do the same thing again." When he finished, he said, "Now do it a third time." So don't water it once, water it twice. Actually, do it again. And then as the water ran around the altar and even filled the trench, at the usual time of offering the evening sacrifice, Elijah the prophet walked up to the altar and prayed, "O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, prove today that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant. Prove that I've done all of this in your command. O Lord, answer me, so that these people will know you, O Lord our God, that you have brought them back to yourselves." And what happens? Immediately the fire of the Lord flashes down from heaven and burns up the bull. And all these people believed. Again, here's Elijah, this immense man of faith. He's got full confidence. He's mocking 450 people on the other side. And then when it comes to his turn, he's like, "Dude, put some water on it. Actually, put some more. No, that's not enough. Put even more." He's so full of faith and confidence, knowing God is going to do what he said he would do. He is faithful. But then what happens? In the very next chapter, the king goes, tells his wife, and his wife vows to kill him. And in an instant, his faith turns to fear, and he runs terrified. This is what happens. It says that he went alone into the wilderness. Traveling all day, he sat down under a solitary broom tree and prayed that he might die. "I've had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life, for I'm no better than my ancestors who have already died." I mean, isn't that such a story of us? In one moment, we are full of confidence, full of faith in our life, relationships, and work. And the next, we're like, "Dude, I want to throw it all away. I'm done. I can't do this no more." He is so full of fear and doubt. But again, I think this is what it means to be human. But here's the beauty, is Elijah called out honestly to the Lord, saying, "This is how I feel." And what was God's response? He hears the fear and he brings comfort and refuge. He provides food, water, and a safe place to sleep. Now again, I tell this story because no one would argue that Elijah wasn't faithful. His faithfulness was on full display, but so is his fear. Both were true about him and both were present with him at almost the exact same time. You see, both faith and fear can be present within us. And if we acknowledge fear exists, instead of denying it, we recognize our need for protection, help, and refuge from the Father. It's not faith over fear, but rather it's faith within fear. And oftentimes it's our fear that can lead to faith. Fear is a very powerful tool and a gift from God. I have not always felt that, but it's true. I've learned to honor my fear instead of denying it. To not feel shame when I feel it, but rather pay attention to it. And to pursue my Father with my need and to grow my faith within it. I've also learned that fear can lead to wisdom. There's a beautiful gift when it comes to fear. I mean, imagine someone who has no fear. Right? We all know those people. But imagine somebody who has no fear. We wouldn't describe them as wise at all. Instead, we would say they're reckless because they don't have a healthy measure of fear. My fear and subsequent reliance on him has led me into a beautiful relationship with my Father. If I'm honest with you, I've not always trusted God as my Father. I knew Jesus, loved Jesus, but I always struggle with the idea that there's this Father who loves me, partly because of my story. But over the last few years, my faith in him as a loving Father has grown. My trust in him has grown. And he's led me to do some pretty incredible things. I've done things in the last few years I never thought I would. I've enjoyed the freedom of risking, which is really scary, but also really exciting. And trying new things, which if you're an Enneagram stick, like I'm the guy who, I order the same thing at every restaurant because if I get something new and it tastes bad, well, then I just wasted $20. And so I do the same thing over and over. And my friends get angry because I want to do the same thing over and over and over. I want the consistency. But I've been invited by the Father to try and risk and do new things. And it's been pretty incredible. I found that instead of being captive by fear, I've acknowledged it and invited him just to what I need. So a couple things that have happened over the last few years that have led me into, I think, risking and trying new things. One of the things, we bought a 4.5-acre farm. Guys, I've never lived on a farm in my life. The most amount of land I've ever had was the back of a townhome. Like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I'll give you an example. My neighbor was outside throwing grass seed the other day, and I was like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm throwing grass seed." I'm like, "But you already have grass." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm like, should I throw grass seed down? He's like, I don't know. So guess what I did? I bought a bag of grass seed. Next day I was out there throwing grass seed. I don't know where I'm supposed to throw it. I don't know what it does. But that's my life now. But there's so many things when it comes to this property that I'm learning. I mean, I moved a giant shed. Me and my buddy moved a giant shed with my truck. Gosh, that was a scary day. But there's just so many different things. I mean, like, I'll tell you, just the other day, we have a chicken coop. In front of my chicken coop was a giant poop. Now, we have some puppies, but our puppies couldn't do this. So immediately, I'm like, there's a coyote. Either that or my neighbor's really upset with me. But I was like, what do I do? Do I need to get, like, is it a coyote or a bear is what I was thinking. Like, it's definitely a coyote or a bear. And I'm like, do I get bear spray? Like, do I stay up all night? Do I need night vision goggles? Like, what is the process here? Because I don't understand, right? I'm like, is the coyote taunting me? Is this a sign or a signal? Is he watching me? He's like, good, he found my first clue, right? I don't know. It's been a lot of fun. So if you have land, I need tips because I'm struggling. It's something I never thought we would do. The second thing is, 2 years ago, I picked up a camera for the first time. If you're a photographer, dude, welcome. If you're not, awesome. I picked it up because I was trying to recruit some new leaders. They were into photography, and I was like, I got a camera. I don't know what to do with it. And we went on a trip. I took some really terrible photos. And when I got back, I heard God just inviting me to pull in that thread a little bit. Dude, it has led me places I never thought it would. Within the first year, probably the coolest experience and moment, I had I took a picture of one of my friends, and it was up on a billboard in Times Square. I'm like, this is insane. At 35, starting a new hobby like that, for me, it was such a risk, right? And lastly, probably one of the biggest risks we've ever taken is my wife and I are actually in the process of adopting. Now, I said no to this many times, and God just kept working on my heart. And so we're in this process, and we're so close. We're looking to adopt here in the next couple months. Now, again, I've learned to trust my Father, but it's easier said than done. I don't pretend to get up here and give you 3 easy steps on how to do this better. That is not at all what I want. Fear is ever constant, ever present within us, even in me. I was feeling so much fear and anxiety, not simply because of this, just other things in my life. It's just always present. But what I've learned and what I've been invited into is to pay attention to this fear. You see, fear doesn't go away. And it's not something we can control. And as Americans, we want to control things. We want things to be right. And the reality is, we just can't. And there's a beauty to that. Chip Dodd, and I'll close with this, says this, feelings are not impulses that need to be controlled. They are tools that we need to learn how to use well so that we do not behave impulsively or act without the ability to take responsibility. There's a responsibility when it comes to my fear. I don't know if this is an Enneagram 6 thing, but I love like Law and Order, Criminal Minds. Like, I love those types of shows. I'm not sure what it is. But man, if I binge watch like Law and Order for like 6 hours, you best believe when I'm done, I'm checking every lock. I'm looking out the windows, right? The fear is hiding in me. So much so that I'm like, you know what? I need to be responsible with my fear. I need to be aware of the things that I consume and the things that speak to fear. Again, there's a responsibility when it comes to our emotions and our fear. We need to learn how to use them. Dodd goes on to say that we need to, one, feel our feelings. That is easier said than done. We don't like to feel our feelings. We spend so much time denying, pushing, and working through them, right? Instead of actually feeling what we feel. We need to feel our feelings. Secondly, is we need to tell the truth about what's happening inside of us. This may look like counseling or therapy or groups like Plumline, but being honest about where we are and what we're dealing with. And third is recognize our innate craving for full life and our inability to control it, all so that we can let God do what we cannot do as we experience these feelings in our life. So as the band comes back up, that's the invitation. To feel our feelings, to tell the truth, and to acknowledge that we live in a world that we cannot control. Again, if you're like me, fear is not going to go away. And I don't think it should. I think there's a healthiness to fear that can lead us into some pretty amazing gifts. What I want to do is we have stations around the room where we have communion, you can give and write prayers. And as the band plays, we're going to have just a little bit of time. What I want you guys to do is answer this question. And the question is, what are you afraid of? Now, I'm not looking for like your greatest fear. So if like you write snakes on there, that's fine. That's just not what I'm looking for. But like, what is consuming you in regards to fear? Whether it's this week, this year, it could be the state of our world, the state of your world, relationships, life, money, whatever it is, I want you to feel it. And then if you're willing, write it down. And the second thing I want you to do is write down what you need from the Father. So feel your feelings, acknowledge your fear, write it down, and then write down what you need. Let me pray. Jesus, I'm so thankful for this time together. And man, the example that you give through your Son and through your Word. God, I would pray that as most of us, I think, struggle with fear, that we begin to acknowledge that there's a need within us specifically from you. And so will you help us that when we feel fear, we don't deny it, refuse it, but rather we acknowledge it. We acknowledge the need for our Father to come give us protection, help, and refuge. In this we pray. Amen.